We take up now our reading in the first book of Kings, chapter 2, beginning with verse 10. So David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. The period that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. Then Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. Now Adoniah, the son of Haggit, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, and she said, "Do you come peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably." Moreover, he said, "I have something to say to you." And she said, "Say it." Then he said, "You know that the kingdom was mine, and all Israel had set their expectations on me, that I should reign. However, the kingdom has been turned over and has become my brother's, for it was his from the Lord. Now I ask one petition of you, do not deny me." And she said to him, "Say it." Then he said, "Please speak to King Solomon, for he will not refuse you, that he may give me Abishag the Shunammite as wife." So Bathsheba said, "Very well, I will speak for you to the king." What do we see here in this passage? First of all, we read that David slept with his fathers. After a reign of 40 years, it was actually 40 years and 6 months, but the number is rounded off here. And Solomon sat on the throne, and his kingdom was firmly established. When Adoniah exalted himself to be king, the people of Israel hesitated. All the eyes of Israel were on David. They hesitated. They thought, it doesn't add up. Did we hear wrong? We had a special public meeting where the king designated Solomon as his successor, as his God-appointed successor. Did we hear wrong? They had hesitated. Some people had followed Adoniah, but the rest of the people in the tribes, they held back because they weren't sure. But now when Solomon was made king, they were so joyful, the noise of their celebration was so great that the earth rent with the sound of the music and of the celebration. They thought, right on, that's it. Now everything is in order. Now things are organized. This is how they should be. That's what we read in those words. And Solomon's kingdom was firmly established. But that wasn't the end of Adoniah. Remember what Solomon had said in chapter 1 and verse 52? If he proves himself a worthy man, not one hair of him shall fall to the earth, but if wickedness is found in him, he shall die. That was a clear warning. And when Adoniah came and bowed before King Solomon, he publicly acknowledged Solomon as the king. And Solomon told him, go to your house. So he went to his own house. He was supposed to live the rest of his life in privacy, not meddle anymore in public affairs. But we find here, as the book of Proverbs says, every fool will be meddling. And he meddled to the loss of his life. He risked the prohibition of Solomon. And in doing so, he showed his true colors. They say, give a man enough rope and he will hang himself. Give a wrongdoer enough rope, their character will destroy them. We don't have to do anything. The Lord will see to it that they betray themselves, that they ruin themselves. And on the positive side, a person who has integrity will have that integrity demonstrated and vindicated. In the case of Adoniah, he did a sly thing. He did what Satan did to Adam and Eve. He came to the woman. He came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. And of course she was apprehensive because she had been instrumental in deposing him. Nathan the prophet had told her, you read about it in chapter 1, won't you remind King David of his promise to your son Solomon. She had done so, the Lord had prospered it, it had succeeded. And the result was David reasserted Solomon. Fancy having to make Solomon king the second time. But that's what David had to do. He asserted Solomon, and Adoniah was deposed. But now he's trying again. That's why she was apprehensive, because she thought maybe he was coming with hostile intentions. But he said, no, I've come peaceably. Deceitful words, hidden agenda. In Proverbs chapter 26, we read about people like that. Proverbs chapter 26. Verse 24 through 26. Here's an apt description of people like that. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the whole congregation. And that's exactly Adoniah here. So he went on in verse 14 to tantalize Bathsheba. I have somewhat to say to you. It's like the serpent saying to Eve, yea, hath God said? In other words, questioning this status quo, questioning the God-ordered situation, the situation that God had ordered, questioning it, debating with it. This is the first danger signal. This is the first sign of unfaithfulness to God, when people ask questions where there should be no questions asked, where it should be a matter of obedience. It is a snare, said the book of Proverbs, for the man who devoureth that which is holy, and after vows to make inquiry. I have something to say to you. And she said, say it. And now comes his first falsehood. Verse 15. Then he said, you know that the kingdom was mine. It was not. It never had been meant for him. He laid claim to it. He thought that he could take the kingdom. He had exalted himself. That was the first falsehood. He had neither been designated by God nor by his father David. And just because he was the oldest surviving brother does not make him eligible. We read later on in the book of Chronicles that the genealogy is not to be reckoned by birthright, because although the tribe of Reuben was the tribe of the firstborn, the chief ruler came from the tribe of Judah, who was fourth down the line. The firstborn doesn't automatically succeed to the throne. God never says anywhere there that the firstborn is the one who gets the preeminence. In fact, God delighted always in choosing the second over the first. The older shall serve the younger. It seems to be a pattern in the scriptures, so he was wrong there. And then he also says something else. And all Israel had set their expectations on me that I should reign. Why was it then that the people of Israel had hesitated and were looking to David to see him ratify this? He had not. All Israel had set their expectations upon me. That was a second falsehood. There had been considerable hesitation. Chapter 1 and verse 20. And as for you, this is Bathsheba speaking to David. And as for you, my lord, O king, the eyes of all Israel are on you, that you should tell them who will sit on the throne of my lord the king after him. Adoniah had exalted himself, but the people of Israel were saying, wait a minute, we haven't heard from the king. Something is wrong here. A third falsehood he makes. Do you notice how people establish their claim by bending the truth, as someone put it, or being economical with the truth, or by deliberately understating or overstating? Do you know how you can make someone an object of ridicule? draw their portrait and then make the nose a little bit too big or the ears too big or something like that, and you've got a caricature. It is the person, generally speaking, you can recognize the person, but it is a caricature. And what he was doing here was caricaturing the truth, exaggerating, minimizing, twisting things. He says, all Israel had set their expectation on me that I should reign. However, the kingdom has been turned over. Do you notice the words there? Very clever, but very sly. Charging Solomon with having usurped him. That's what he's saying. The kingdom has been turned over and has become my brother's. It was mine, but my brother took it from me. That's really what he's saying in very genteel language. And lastly, for it was his from the Lord. Paying lip service to the will of God, but really saying, you know, really, God has not been fair to me. God has not done right by me. God, the holy God, has acknowledged this usurper. And in doing so, he is manipulating the facts and making God appear unjust. We have another example of that in Eli the priest. People think he was a very godly man. At least what he said was a very godly thing. When the Lord said through Samuel, I will judge him and his house forever for his sin which he has committed against me, because his sons made themselves vile and he restrained them not, when Eli heard it, he said, it is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good. Let him do what seems good to him. Very pious. Sounds like the language of submission. But it came from a man who had demonstrated anything but submission. God had sent him warning after warning. Your sons are ungodly. Do something about it while you can. He did nothing. And God had to say to them, you prefer your sons above me, and therefore I will judge you. And then when it was out of his hands and he could do nothing more about it, he made a virtue out of necessity. And he said, it is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good. Poor me, I can't do anything about it. Phony. Phony piety. Well, that was Adonijah's pitch here. And now, having carefully softened up the opposition, and having appealed to Bathsheba's kind heart, he says in verse 16, now I ask one petition of you, do not deny me. And she said to him, say it. Just give me one little thing, poor little me. You see how much I've been deprived of. Now please, will you give me just this little crumb of comfort? Hypocrite. Masked wickedness behind those words. Behind his complaint. Using moral pressure. This kind of moral pressure was used against Nehemiah. His enemies wanted to lure him away from Jerusalem and from building the wall. It has been reported of you, and Gashmu, the Arabian, has said it too. Who cares about Gashmu? Gashmu, Shmashmu. But they said to Nehemiah, it has been reported that you are plotting. Come now and let us speak together. Let's have a little powwow. If Nehemiah had given in to that, he would have given credibility to their accusation. But he said, I am doing a great work. I cannot come down. Why should I leave the work of God and come down to talk to you? Where were they going to talk together? In one of the villages of, oh no! Oh no! Oh no, Nehemiah! You're not to do this. Oh no, Nehemiah! You've got to stop building the wall. Oh no, Nehemiah! Stop all this work of God. The one of the villages of, oh no! Well named, isn't it? Well, he came to her and he said, verse 17, then he said, Please speak to King Solomon, for he will not refuse you, that he may give me Abishag the Shunammite as wife. And she melted. She thought, this poor fellow, he's madly in love with this beautiful young woman. And the truth is, although she had been David's wife, he had never had any physical relationship with her. So it looked as though he just wanted this beautiful woman, that he was madly in love with her. He was pulling strings, like Satan did with Eve, as Satan deceived Eve through his subtlety. Give me Abishag, downplaying the consolation prize. But it was forbidden by law. According to the Torah, you cannot take your father's wife. 1 Corinthians 5, we read about a man who had his father's wife, and Shaul, writing to them, he says, you should mourn and pray that God will take this wicked person away from you, or that you should kick him out. Give me Abishag, and Bathsheba fell for it. Verse 18. So Bathsheba said, very well, I will speak for you to the king. She was not aware of his cunning, of his treachery. It was obvious to Solomon, but it wasn't to her, because she had a tender heart. Doesn't that send us a warning signal that we should never let our heart rule our heads? Our minds should always be predominant. Yes, indeed, with the truth of God and in all our decisions, the mind and heart go together, but the heart should never take precedence over the mind. When we do that, we're swayed by emotion, not by reason. Very well, I will speak for you to the king. Then we go on with the narrative, verse 19 through 25. Bathsheba therefore went to King Solomon to speak to him for Adonijah, and the king rose up to meet her and bowed down to her and sat down on his throne and had a throne set for the king's mother. So she sat at his right hand. Then she said, I desire one small petition of you. Do not refuse me. And the king said to her, ask it, my mother, for I will not refuse you. So she said, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as wife. And King Solomon answered and said to his mother, now why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? It's not for yourself after all, is it, mother? It's for someone else. And for someone else whose carefully concealed treachery I can see very clearly. Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is my older brother. For him and for Abiathar the priest and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. Then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, may God do so to me and more also, if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life. Now therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and set me on the throne of David my father, and who has made me a house as he promised, Adonijah shall be put to death today. So King Solomon sent by the hand of Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and he struck him down, and he died. The death of the traitor. Bathsheba went into her son, an unwitting accomplice of Adonijah. It happened before with Adonijah's half-brother, Absalom. When Absalom was about to rebel against his father, he was plotting to kill his father and take the throne. He went under pretense of paying his vow to Hebron. He got the king's blessing. He said, your servant is going to Hebron because when I was in exile, I made a vow to the Lord, and now I'm going to pay it. King David, totally unsuspecting, said, bless you, my son. Go right ahead. So he went to Hebron. He was offering sacrifices. But while he was offering sacrifices, we read the conspiracy was strong, and with him went several people from the tribe of Judah who went in their simplicity. They knew nothing. They didn't realize. They were unwitting accomplices. And that's what was happening here too. Bathsheba was an unwitting accomplice of the traitor. We see a beautiful picture here of how the king respected his mother. Do you have a mother? Be sure that you give her every mark of honor. The King Solomon is an example to us of how we should, our attitude should be towards our mother or our grandmother. The king rose up to meet her and bowed down to her and sat down on his throne. I'll say this by way of incentive. I've noticed that young men who honor their mothers usually do well with their wives. They're usually good to their wives as well. He bowed down to her and sat down on his throne and had a throne set for the king's mother. So she sat at his right hand, the highest place of honor. He remembered what one of the Ten Commandments, honor thy father and mother, that thy days may be long upon the earth. She sat at his right hand, and then she said, I desire one small petition of you. He really thought that she was asking a favor, a personal favor. And that's why he said, I will not say you nay. I will not refuse you. No lawful favor. That's the condition, of course, that the favor she asked for was a lawful one. And then when she came out with the request, he knew exactly what was behind it. She was relaying Adonijah's request, and she says, let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah, your brother, as wife. He is your brother. He is your half-brother, but he does belong to the family. Just do this kindness to him. But King Solomon saw the subterfuge, and that made the request unlawful. King Solomon answered and said to his mother, why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite? He is a type of the Messiah, isn't he? Just here. At the wedding in Cana of Galilee, Mary came to Yeshua, and when the wine had run out, and she said to him, they have no wine. He said, woman, what have I to do with you? My time has not yet come. What he was saying was, you cannot interfere now with my mediatorial ministry. I am the great Messiah. I have been appointed to public ministry now, and my mother cannot interfere with my public ministry. She could tell me what to do just when I am her son. As her son, I must listen to what she tells me. But when it comes to being under God's authority and doing God's work, not even a mother has a right to interfere in her son's calling. My time is not yet come. He was saying to her, God has given me a time and a place to say and to do everything. Nobody can tell me what to do. Nobody can tell me what to say except my Heavenly Father. That's what he was saying. And in effect, he was doing what Solomon did. He was putting his mother in her place. Politely, but firmly. Woman, what have I to do with thee? And this is in effect what Solomon did here. Now why do you ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also. As it turned out, it was God's good pleasure to turn the water into wine. But if God the Father had not commanded it, the Lord wouldn't have moved a finger. Well, let's go on with this narrative. He noticed that Adonijah had accomplices in the plot for him and for Abiathar the priest and for Joab the son of Zeruiah. He said, I knew it. They're all in this together. They were the ones that set up Adonijah when he exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And now they're behind this fiendish plot. He could recognize the hand of Joab in it. He's like his father David. Let's go back to 2 Samuel chapter 14. There we have some story told by a wise woman of Tekoa. 2 Samuel chapter 14. Joab noticed that King David longed to have Absalom back from exile. Absalom was in exile for murder. And David wanted Absalom back. So Joab played a trick on David. He got a widow woman to go to him with a made-up story about her two sons, two of her sons who fought, one killed the other, and now they're surviving. The murderous brother who had survived was about to forfeit his life. And she said, I won't have any successors if that murderous son dies. King David had fallen for it. And he said, all right, I'll make sure that your murderous son is spared. And she turned around and said to him, but why don't you do the same for your murderous son? She got him. And then King David realized, he recognized who it was that was behind this woman. In verse 18, 2 Samuel 14, verse 18, then the king answered and said to the woman, please do not hide from me anything that I ask you. And the woman said, please, let my lord the king speak. And the king said, is the hand of Joab with you in all this? And in her long-winded way, she said, yes, your majesty, you've hit the nail on the head. She had verbal diarrhea. Look at how she says. And the woman answered and said, as you live, my lord the king, no one can turn to the right hand or to the left from anything, etc., etc., etc. But what it amounted to was, yes, you're right. The hand of Joab. And now Solomon, son of David, noticed the hand of Joab. It was a setup. How people love setups. We are still plagued with schemers. They cause an awful lot of trouble in the house of God. Schemers. Well, he said, very well, I'll have to act. He noticed that the accomplices were the same ones that had helped Adonijah in his attempt to usurp the throne. And so, verse 23, then King Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, may God do so to me and more also, if Adonijah has not spoken this word against his own life. Remember what Solomon had said? If he proves himself a worthy man, not one hair of him shall fall to the earth. But if wickedness is found in him, he shall die. Give a bad man enough rope, he will hang himself. And that's what happened to this man. He died self-condemned. Swift retribution comes upon the rebel. He died self-condemned. Solomon sent by the hand of Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he struck him down, and he died. And the kingdom was established in Solomon's power. Proverbs chapter 29. Proverbs chapter 29 is an apt epitaph for Adonijah. Verse 1. He who is often reproved and hardens his neck will suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. What a warning. We have to make sure that when God speaks to us, even if it's by way of reproof, that we are listening with both ears. A friend of mine, who's a fine Christian man, told me that as a young man, he kicked over the traces. He rebelled, he went his own way. And without telling me what the Lord did, he said the Lord hit him hard. He knew it was God hitting him hard, but he ignored it. He said, the second time God hit me, I said, all right, Lord, you win. It was so painful the second time. He gave in. He submitted. Here he is in his late 80s, an outstanding Christian man. But it needed the Lord to clobber him twice before he finally listened. We don't have to do that. We don't have to be so foolish. In the book of Job, there's some very good advice given by Elihu to Job. It is surely proper to say to God, I have borne chastening. I will not offend any more. If I have done wrong, teach me. That which I do not see, teach me. And if I have offended, I will not do it anymore.